When we think of Howard Hughes and other pioneers who have flown around the globe in a matter of hours, 80 days seems a very long time in which to make the same journey, especially if we are doing it to break a record, for a wager. Yet the flying ace of two world wars has told us that this week's story is his favorite story. I refer, of course, to Mr. Eddie Rickenbacker, and the story is Around the World in 80 Days by Jules Verne. Before we start, I asked you to bear in mind the period of our adventure, those leisurely mid-Victorian days of 75 years ago, when to travel far afield, say to China or the South Seas, was in itself a considerable undertaking. But the journey of our friend, Mr. Phileas Fogg, whom I shall be representing in just a few moments, is a fast and exciting narrative. And I believe our condensed version may persuade many to read, or perhaps read again, this famous old tale. Well, Sweden, strike up the band and let's go. Around the World in 80 Days. Good fellow?
Passepartout.
French, no doubt.
French, Mr. Fogg.
You are applying to go into service as my valet, huh?
If you please, sir.
Tell me, Passepartout, what are your qualifications as a gentleman's gentleman?
I have been a circus rider, a professor of gymnastics, a traveling troubadour, and a sergeant fireman in Paris. However, I have long desired a more peaceful and tranquil life.
And why do you seek this position with me?
I have heard that Mr. Phileas Fogg was the most exact and settled gentleman in the United Kingdom.
Exact, eh? All right, let's see. Passepartout, what time is it?
My watch says 22 minutes after 11.
Yes, it's a bad start. You are 3 minutes and 18 seconds slow.
Oh, mon Dieu.
No matter. I want you to understand that I arise at precisely 8 in the morning, Greenwich Mean Time. Tea and toast at 23 minutes past 9. At 11:30, I leave for the Reformed Club. Is this clear?
Quite clear, Mr. Fogg.
My previous valet was required to leave my service because he brought my shaving water at 84 degrees, Fahrenheit, of course, instead of 86. I trust you will not be so careless as to make a similar error.
Mr. Fogg, this is just what I have always wanted, a domestic methodical existence, regularity. Oh, I am sure we shall get on together, Mr. Fogg.
That is how I hired Passepartout as my valet. On the morning of October the 2nd, Anno Domini 1872, I shut the door to my house on Savile Row, placed my right foot ahead of my left foot 575 times, my left foot ahead of my right 500...
...to pass from England tonight in a great hurry. Fogg answers the description perfectly. Am certain he is the bank robber. I will stay on his trail. Send warrant of arrest to Suez without delay. Signed, Fix, Detective.
If there was anything amiss at the outset of our trip, I didn't know of it. Passepartout and I crossed the channel to Paris, sped by rail to the coast of Italy, and there boarded the steamer Mongolia for Suez. The voyage across the Mediterranean proceeded exactly according to schedule, and I arrived with my valet at the entrance of the canal on Friday, October the 9th at 11 a.m., 158 and a half hours after leaving London. We had no time to waste sightseeing. The wonders of Egypt, with her age-old pyramids and her mute and sleepless sphinx crouching in their shadow, all this was lost to us. We saw only the sea-washed deck of our steamer and the grimy windows of railroad trains. We noticed one thing which surprised us, however. I say, Passepartout.
Yes, Mr. Fogg?
Do you see that fellow standing by the door of the steamship office? Doesn't he look familiar to you?
Why, yes, Mr. Fogg. That is the same man who spoke to me on the gangplank of the boat train.
In England?
Yes.
Oh. Then how did he get here?
You are not the only person who can cross Europe to Africa in 6 days, Mr. Phileas Fogg.
How do you know my name?
I expected to have a message for you here in Suez, Mr. Fogg.
Ah.
But there seems to have been some delay in the cable connection.
A message for me?
Pray do not be concerned about it, sir. I promise to deliver it later.
I must say I was somewhat annoyed by the man's sinister behavior. However, Passepartout and I had little time to worry about this stranger. There was £20,000 to be won, and the vast continent of Asia to be crossed. So my faithful valet and I set out to accomplish in half a month the journey which had taken Marco Polo half a lifetime. Almost before I knew it, we were in India, and comfortably seated in a train of the Great India Peninsula Railway. But as our train wound through the foothills of Pune, across the Khandish, and into the cavernous defiles of the Satpur Mountains, I found myself wondering what incidents might possibly occur to delay us, and how I should cope with them. Presently, my worst imaginings came true.
Mr. Fogg, what is happening?
Oh, we shall find out at once. Conductor, why has the train stopped here?
Because this is the end of the line.
You are leaving us here in this dismal jungle?
Tracks go no further, sir.
The London papers announced that the railway was completed all the way across India.
The London papers were wrong. There's a stretch of 50 miles from here to Allahabad, where the railroad resumes again.
Mr. Fogg, we have lost.
Oh, no. Oh, no. This was foreseen.
You knew all along that the railway was incomplete?
I anticipated such an obstacle. Never fear, Passepartout. We shall reach Calcutta in time to board the steamer for Hong Kong. There is merely one small errand which I wish you to perform.
And what is that?
I want you to buy me an elephant. At a nearby native village, Passepartout found an elephant, which we purchased for the outlandish price of £2,000. I mounted the back of this turdy beast, along with my valet and a young Indian guide. I found the elephant a surprisingly comfortable mode of travel. Just as we were nearing Allahabad, we saw in the distance a long procession of Brahmins marching through the jungle in ceremonial dress. Our native guide tethered the elephant in a clump of bushes and cautioned us to make no sound. If the Brahmins knew we were looking on during their sacred rites, it would have cost us our lives. Passepartout stood beside me in our hiding place, scarcely daring to breathe.
Mr. Fogg, what is that ugly red statue with the four arms?
I believe that is Kali, the goddess of love and death.
Of death, perhaps, but of love, that ugly old hag, oh, never.
If it is beauty you wish to gaze on, Passepartout, observe the young woman who is coming into the clearing.
Look at her face, Mr. Fogg. Her skin is as fair as a European.
Strange.
But they are tying her hands and putting her on that huge pile of sticks. Why, Mr. Fogg, what are they going to do to her?
It's incredible. I've read of such barbaric things, but I had no idea they were actually practiced in this enlightened age.
Mr. Fogg, I believe they are going to burn that beautiful young girl alive.
Passepartout, we shall try and save her. I am still 12 hours ahead of schedule.
Why, you are a man of heart.
When I am 12 hours ahead of schedule. Before our very eyes, this lovely creature was to be sacrificed on a funeral pyre, dying in the same flames which would consume the lifeless corpse of her late husband. Such is the ritual of the Brahmins. When a Raja dies, the most beautiful of his wives must perish with him. However, I had a plan, a daring scheme. When I confided it to Passepartout, his eyes fairly bulged from their sockets.
Mr. Fogg, if we are caught...
Do exactly as I've told you, and we won't be caught. Later, when the funeral pyre had been ignited and the flames were about to reach the poor girl, a miracle seemed to happen. The body of the dead Raja began to move. In the weird firelight, the corpse rose to its feet. The fanatic Brahmins fell back in a frenzy of fear. In this confusion, I dashed upon the funeral pyre. Flames danced about my ankles. Give me your hands. I'll cut the cord.
Help me.
Quickly. Throw your arms around my shoulders. Not a moment to spare.
Where are we going?
I have an elephant nearby. There's always room for one more on an elephant.
Wait for me, Mr. Fogg.
All right, hurry, Passepartout. Don't bother to give back that costume you borrowed from the dead Roger. We're on our way. Are you ready for Act Two of Jules Verne's Around the World in 80 Days? Well, here it comes.
This is the favorite story of the famous airman, Mr. Eddie Rickenbacker. And starring in the role of the intrepid Phileas Fogg, who makes this remarkable journey, is your favorite story host, Ronald Coleman.
There I was in the middle of darkest India, and in my arms the most beautiful woman in the world.
You have saved my life.
I have done no more than any gentleman would do, especially a Fogg, under the same circumstances. Permit me to introduce myself. I am Phileas Fogg.
And I am Aouda, unhappiest of women.
With your permission, Miss Aouda, I shall take you away from your unhappiness. But first, tell me, how is it that you speak English so perfectly?
I was educated in England, Mr. Fogg, but I am an orphan, and I was married against my will to the old Roger, Bundelkund.
Ah.
Oh, they will try it again to kill me. I am in great danger.
Ah, madam, you are in perfect safety. You are with Phileas Fogg. So it was that our little party became three instead of two. The lovely Miss Aouda, my valet Passepartout, and myself. Now, if I were to tell you all our adventures and misadventures, it would take 80 days of telling. Let me only say that we crossed India, arrived by steamer in Hong Kong, and managed, by an extremely narrow margin, to connect with an ocean liner which was departing for San Francisco. One thing struck me as very strange. The man named Fix always seemed to be about. I thought at the time that he was just a traveler like ourselves. Passepartout found out his real mission.
Do you know who I am, Monsieur Passepartout?
I have my suspicions. I think you are an agent for the Reform Club, tagging along to see if my master really goes around the world.
You are wrong. I am a police detective.
A detective?
Mr. Fogg's wager is only a pretext. He's the man who, on the 28th of September, stole £55,000 from the Bank of England.
You are a scoundrel and a liar, and deserve a punch in the face, which I have every intention of delivering to you right now.
Oh. On the 3rd of December, we entered the Bay of the Golden Gate. We had reached the American continent. And so began our trip by rail. From ocean to ocean, from sea to shining sea. A great deal happened on that trip. Herds of buffalo delayed the train. Sioux Indians attacked us. Snowdrifts delayed us. But the most unusual incident of all occurred at the spot called Medicine Bow. Miss Aouda, I am delighted to have discovered that you play whist. And you play an excellent game.
Thank you, Mr. Fogg.
I play a heart. Oh, I believe the train is stopping. Passepartout, see what's the matter.
Yes, Mr. Fogg.
You can't pass. The bridge at Medicine Bow is shaky. It won't bear the weight of the train.
Medicine Bow, huh? Oh, I note by my guidebook that this is a suspension bridge thrown over some dangerous rapids.
Several of the iron wires of the bridge are broken. It's impossible to cross.
Passepartout, get the engineer.
Yes, sir.
Signalman, is it possible to get across by boat?
No, sir. The only ford's 10 miles to the north of here.
Here is the engineer, Mr. Fogg.
I'm very sorry, ladies and gentlemen.
Engineer, for $1,000, will you try an experiment?
What sort of an experiment?
By putting on the highest possible speed, we might have a chance of getting over.
I won't allow it.
Signalman. Here's $1,000 for you. It's very important that we get across.
Well, at full speed, there's a 50-50 chance that you might get across.
Engineer, will you try it?
We'll try it.
Good.
Forward!
Miss Aouda, shall we continue with our game of whist?
Oh.
I have just played a heart. The engineer backed up the train for nearly a mile, retiring like a jumper in order to take a longer leap. Then we began to move forward. The train increased its speed, and soon its rapidity became frightening. The whole train, rushing on at 100 miles an hour, hardly touched the rails. Like a flash, no one saw the bridge. The train leaped from one bank to the other. And a moment after, the bridge fell with a crash into the rapids of Medicine Bow. Miss Aouda, shall we continue our game of whist? The North American continent was spanned. But we missed the boat from New York to Liverpool. I was obliged to purchase a steamer in order to make the trip. All in all, the 80 days cost me £20,000. So it was imperative that I reach London by 9:15 on the evening of Saturday, December the 21st. I had to win the wager to break even. We set foot on English soil at noon on December the 21st. But the moment we disembarked on the Liverpool dock, only 6 hours from London, the man named Fix put his hand on my shoulder.
Phileas Fogg?
Yes?
I arrest you in the Queen's name.
What possible charge?
Stealing £55,000 from the Bank of England.
Liverpool prison. Back in England, only hours from London, and I was being delayed in a prison cell. My wager was lost. And then suddenly...
Mr. Fogg! Mr. Fogg! We have wonderful news. Hurry, hurry, blast you, Fix.
What? Well, what is it?
Come out with it, man. Tell him.
Sir, forgive me. I followed you around the world because of an amazing, an unfortunate resemblance. The real robber was apprehended 3 days ago. You are free, sir.
Have you ever seen an Englishman run? Especially a fog. We ran as fast as we could to the nearest station. We hired a special train. Put on full steam. But we arrived in London at 9:10 on Saturday evening, the 21st of December. Having made a tour of the world, we were 5 minutes late. We were three wretched people, Miss Aouda, Passepartout, and myself. We suffered through a dismal, silent Sunday. But on Sunday evening, I knew I had to talk to Miss Aouda. She looked at me with deepest sympathy.
I wish there was something I could do, Mr. Fogg.
There is nothing, Miss Aouda. We are victims of time. Will you forgive me for bringing you to England?
Forgive?
Oh, please let me finish. When I rescued you in India, I was a man of means. I counted on placing my fortune at your disposal. But now, I am penniless.
I ask you in turn, dear Mr. Fogg, to forgive me for having followed you and perhaps delaying you, thus contributing to your ruin.
But you couldn't remain in India. Tell me what I can do for you now. I have little left, but it is yours.
But what will become of you, Mr. Fogg?
I have need of nothing.
Your relatives?
I no longer have any relatives.
Oh, Mr. Fogg, solitude is a sad thing. They say, though, that misery itself, shared by two sympathetic souls, may be borne with patience.
They say so, madam.
Mr. Fogg, do you wish at once a kinswoman and friend? Will you have me for your wife?
Miss Sauda, I believe you did not see me waver once during all of our harrowing voyage, but this moves me deeply. From the moment I first saw you, I knew you were as good and noble as you are beautiful. And though I appear to have a heart shaped like a clock, it ticks only for you. That is to say, it is filled with love, Miss Aouda.
Ah.
Passepartout! Passepartout!
Yes, Mr. Fogg.
Go quickly. Notify the Reverend Samuel Wilson that we wish him to perform a marriage ceremony. When shall it be, Miss Aouda?
Tomorrow.
For tomorrow, Monday. Now, off with you, Passepartout.
Mr. Fogg.
What's wrong, man? What's the matter?
Marriage. Impossible.
Impossible?
Impossible for tomorrow.
Why so?
Because tomorrow is Sunday.
Monday.
No. Today is Saturday.
Impossible.
We have made a mistake of one day. What? The Reverend said something about an international deadline. Ah. It is Saturday, the 21st.
Good Lord! I have calculated everything. Ship sailings and the rate an elephant runs. And I, most meticulous of men, forgot that we gained a day by crossing the international dateline. Oh, Fogg, you fool, you.
Mr. Fogg, it is 20 to 9.
20 to 9. We have 5 minutes to win the wager.
It's 16 minutes until 9. I believe Fogg will not appear.
It is my belief, members of the Reform Club, that Mr. Phileas Fogg will be 20 days late.
15 seconds to go.
He wasn't on the steamer that arrived in Liverpool.
10 seconds.
I believe we can count the £20,000 won, gentlemen.
5 seconds. 4, 3, 2.
Here I am, gentlemen. Deal me in. I had won the wager. I had gone around the world in 80 days. To do this, I had employed every means of conveyance. Steamers, railways, carriages, sledges, elephants. Everything, in fact, except flying through the air. Which is, of course, absolutely absurd. Financially, I was even. So, what had I gained for all my trouble? What had I brought back from this long and weary journey? Nothing, you say? Nothing but a charming woman who made me the happiest of men. For that, any man, especially a Fogg, would go around the world 100 times.